from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Royteam.
Good morning. Happy Thursday, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Thursday, everybody. I promised at the beginning of the show that we were going to have a very packed show, and we are going to be introducing you to another guest in just a moment, and this is a very important conversation. We also want you to be part of the conversation, and you can do that by texting our new State Roofing text line, 888-973-5476. That is 888-973-KIRO. We want to hear from you.
And don't you worry, agree to disagree will happen at 11:30. But right now, Ursula, we have a guest.
We do. And this is to go into what you just heard in Heather's newscast about all the young people who are dying or getting hurt by shootings in King County. Gun violence is rising at an alarming rate, with the number of shootings this year already surpassing 2020's total, which was a record. And most of the shootings involve men. Most of them are from communities of color. So we asked yesterday, what are we going to do about this? King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg had a news conference yesterday. He shared the grim statistics then. He also brought in community partners to discuss how they are going to be a part of the solution. And Sean Good is the executive director of Choose 180. He was at that meeting, and he's going to join us live in just a second. But I want you to hear what he said.
Candidly, prosecution, policing, and programming are all stopgaps. They are simply a pause. They are an opportunity for us as a collective community to figure out what our priorities are, to begin to change the very material conditions that contribute to the types of violence that we're seeing in our community today. Policing, prosecution, and programming are not a solution. They are not the answer. They are a pause. And if we're going to get to the point where we're no longer dealing with this disease of violence, we will need to focus on solutions. Now, I'll tell you, out of those three, prosecution, policing, and programming, I absolutely believe that programming can stand alone as the best option out of the three.
And Sean Good joins us now. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Ursula. Good morning, G. We have to stop meeting like this.
I know, right? Oh, my gosh. we're going to give you a chance to talk to us about some of the success stories. But first of all, there are some listeners right now who don't know what Choose 180 is. Can you describe what you do as a group?
Yeah. Succinctly, we're a nonprofit organization that works to transform systems of injustice and support young people who have been impacted by those systems. And what that looks like is we partner with folks like the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office to change the way that they function and help them by co-creating programming that allows many of their older antiquated practices to live in community instead of living in a courtroom. And that's the gist of our cause.
So how does that look? If you could explain, Sean, so how do you get involved and talk about, if you can give an example of how that has worked successfully? Because we're talking about trying to put more money into programs like yours, but I think a lot of people want to know, does this even work?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for the question, Ursula. We began our relationship with the King County Prosecuting Attorney 10 years ago by offering what's called pre-filing diversion programming. And simply put, what that means is when a young person's behavior is criminalized because they live in a neighborhood that's often overly policed, they get referred to the prosecutor. And instead of the prosecutor sending them to the courts, they send them right back to community. They engage in our programming. They get community instead of a criminal conviction, grace instead of guilt. And 90% of the time, within 12 months, they're not returning to the criminal legal system. We also, because of the success of that, launched programming with Pete Holmes for young adults, 18 to 24-year-olds. And that had the same, and in some instances, higher success rates in supporting those young adults be very similar like programming. And it evolves from there, because even last year, in partnership with three other nonprofit organizations, Collective Justice, Creative Justice, and Community Passageways, we rolled out this thing, the acronym of it's called RCP. But essentially what it is, it's an off-ramp for 600 to 800 young people out of the criminal legal system directly into community to support those that have caused harm and those that have been harmed in a restorative practice instead of the traditional antiquated way that has not worked and only causes harm for both those that have been hurt and those that have been accused of the harming.
Okay, Sean, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. I thought a lot about you a couple nights ago, especially when I saw the report, the 2021 quarter one through quarter three findings of the King County Firearm Violence Report. And here's what I need you to react to. I need you to react to the thoughts and comments of those that are out here when they hear about the increased violence and shootings in King County and in Seattle. So let's start with, it's just a gang problem. How do you respond to that when you hear that?
Yeah. Gee, let me say, I'm a father of a 19-year-old black young adult. I know you are too. A couple weekends ago on Sunday, there was a triple shooting homicide in Des Moines. And on Sunday morning in Pullman, there was a shooting as well where a young man from SeaTac was killed. The first thing I did when I woke up in the morning was call my son and remind him that if he's at a party, he doesn't need to stay to the end. And that it's important for him to get home safe, more important than to have that experience. My son is not in a gang. My son is a college student. That 18-year-old who was shot and killed at a Pullman party, he was also an activist in the community, not a gang member. I went to the funeral of a young man yesterday. Before I did that press conference, right before that press conference with Dan Satterberg, he was not a gang member. He was a community member, a young person who was a bystander. This isn't an issue of gangs in the way that we'd like to memorialize them in our mind. In fact, often when we say gangs, it's kind of a dog whistle to black and brown kids because, like, that's what we think of when we think black and brown violence. We think mob violence because of the images that we've been inundated with. What we have is a cascading of concerns that have gone unaddressed for a really long time that have been absolutely exacerbated by the pandemic. And when you have young people who live in communities who have been isolated for years and now are dealing with the social isolation of the pandemic, having their own mental health crises, folks that are struggling to stay housed and are housing unstable and don't have access to the same educational standards or access to the same quality of health care, then inevitably you have breaks in the system where young people's behavior begins to diminish because they're not getting the support that they need to be healthy and whole. And that's what we're seeing a manifestation of. The other point I'd make, Tuji, is that if you look at the data, we haven't seen a drop in gun violence in a really, really long time. And so we often talk about gun violence rising, which it is nationally. But when was the last time we saw a drop? This is a trend. Now, the trend has increased dramatically over the past year, but we haven't seen a year where it went away. We haven't seen a year where it disappeared. So that's what I want to work towards, a conversation about how do we get it to end and not how do we stop it from rising.
Okay. And to piggyback on top of that, I'm looking at the shooting victim demographics. So you've already covered the gang part of things. I want to go to the numbers. Of the 356 shooting victims from quarter one through quarter three of 2021, 85% of those were male, okay? And 32% of those were between the ages of 18 to 24. But similar to previous years, 50% of the shooting victims, both fatal and non-fatal, were black or African-American. So somebody's saying, okay, well, if it's not gang, why is it always the black community that are that's having these shootings? Talk about that.
Yeah. Let's play a game of common denominators. What are the other things that black people have in common beyond being perpetrated in the media as gang members? How about we talk about a 95-cent wealth gap where black people on average hold a nickel to the dollar of white folks in this country when it comes to actual wealth? How about we talk about housing inequality in our community, the percentage of black people who are living unhoused or housing insecure versus those that are homeowners, or the communities where folks are being pushed into that don't have the necessary infrastructure to support the many needs that are presenting themselves because we've had to operate outside of the primary economy for such a very, very, very long time. You know, it's kind of like saying this, G. It's like saying, you know, clearly COVID's affecting those who are unvaccinated. So why are people not getting vaccinated, right? Why would you not get vaccinated? It's affecting those that aren't getting vaccinated. Well, there's folks who are vaccinated are also affected too, right? A vaccine doesn't stop gun violence from spreading. A mask a mask won't stop, I should say a vaccine won't stop COVID from spreading. A mask won't stop COVID from spreading. We should do things to prevent the spread of it, but these aren't the end of it. And when we look at a population of people who have suffered disproportionately through the lens of gangs, then we think, how do we stop gangs? But if you look at violence through the lens of public health, and this is a pandemic that's impacting a particular pocket of our population, then we should say, well, what's the best way to treat this pocket of our population to reduce the likelihood that they'll be impacted by gun violence?
So, Sean, you're making a lot of sense, and we're getting a lot of feedback from listeners as well. And I want to ask one question just to for you to make the tie. So you talk about poverty, especially during the pandemic. But how specifically does that lead to gun violence then? And there will be people who say, but wait a minute, that's not the case in poor white communities. What is your response?
Well, I would argue that in poor rural white communities, that there is gun violence, and it often shows up in a variety of different ways. We don't have a lot of poor rural white communities in Martin Luther King County. We have some suburban settings where there's people who are living below the poverty line that are white folks, but that's not the majority of what we have in Martin Luther King Jr. County where these data points are pulled from. So as we specifically speak to how poverty connects to this, you need to look at the diversity of concerns and issues and how somebody ends up landing in poverty, right? How much time do we have, Jean Ursula, for me to tie this back?
If we can
begin by talking about capitalism as itself, right? And so how does somebody end up in poverty? People end up in poverty in an inability to engage in a capitalistic system. Capitalism in itself was built off the backs of slavery. Slaves were the capital that not only were insured, not only were traded, but how the South as well as the North generated the majority of the wealth that began at the start of this country. Since then, when black people were liberated from slavery, then we had convict leasing, we had chain gangs, and now we have a disproportionate number of black men, women, and non-binary folks who are incarcerated throughout this country, making slave wages to produce products that people are still wearing today. So how do we end up in a situation where black folks are both living in poverty and disproportionately impacted by violence? Well, we've created a subculture of people who are limited, which is a virtual caste, based upon the fact that we've yet to escape from the root and the founding of our country and invite people into the system of capitalism to be able to benefit from it. I tell people all the time, black folks were the chocolate chip that was baked into the cookie of capitalism. You can't ask the chocolate chip what the cookie tastes like. That's ridiculous. So that's one. And then you look at the lack of access to mental health supports, the lack of access to quality education. When you're transient and you're housing insecure and you don't have the stability necessary to not only pause to consider what the good choice would be, but the indigenous supports that are in place in many of the middle class suburban settings are simply not present. If this was not the case, then we would be able to look at any neighborhood in our community where black folks live and say, well, there should be gun violence here too. And if black folks live in middle to upper class neighborhoods on the east side, on the north side, in some pockets of Pierce and Snohomish counties, then we should see gun violence there too. And we simply do not see that when you look at the data map.
Sean, we only got a few more minutes, and I'm going to try to simplify this. We know you have your program, your amazing program. We'll talk about that in a second. So what next? So what will quarter four look like? What will 2022 look like? How can we at least try to get a dip in the gun violence? What do we need to do?
I'll be succinct. I know that's not easy for me. And I'll say twofold. Number one, programming needs to be resourced as a stopgap so we can have a pause in the violence long enough for us to be intentional and strategic on how we create a long-term public health solution to this. One of the challenges is in King County, our council member Germain did a wonderful job highlighting this in the conference yesterday. We have some really regressive tax processes where we can only increase property tax or sales tax in order to generate revenue to begin to offset some of the inequities. But if you increase property tax and sales tax, then you end up disproportionately impacting those who don't have the resources to compensate for that increase of taxes. So we have to find new ways as a community to generate revenue, to offset the harm, to begin to close that wage gap and get more of our neighbors living in communities where they have the supports they need to be healthy and thrive. That's going to require a shift in ideology on the council and in the community to believe that policing, programming, and prosecution will not be the end, but us resourcing the actual felt needs that people are experiencing would be the direction to go.
Sean, we do just have just a few seconds, but I've got to say, I am one of those that believes in programming, but I also believe in police and prosecution, in especially in cases where there are repeat offenders, or, you know, that sometimes it is taking the much tougher approach that will help turn someone's life around if everything else has not worked. Would you agree with that?
So what I'd ask is this: if you have a loved one who's suffering from cancer, and they go through a cancer treatment and the cancer comes back, do we stop treating the cancer and finding new innovative ways to support that person and become healthy? Mm. Or do we continue to be innovative in our approach and find different ways to serve them if the way that we served them initially simply didn't work? The prison system effectively puts people out on the stretcher after a treatment doesn't work and says, well, good luck. Live as long as you can with whatever quality of life you can. But once you're gone, at least we know we won't be dealing with your form of cancer anymore. We have to be invested in different strategies if one strategy doesn't take, not stopping the strategic process of engaging a person's full humanity.
I mean, I love what you say, Sean, but I would also say that cancer going untreated could also spread. And if you ignore it and ignore all the symptoms, that it could become an even bigger problem.
Which is why I absolutely believe that we have to take a therapeutic approach to stop the spread of a cancer. But if what we've done historically hasn't done that, we've essentially locked patients away and let them die absent of treatment. And that can't be our way forward. I'm not saying that we can stop doing all these things today, Ursula. What I'm saying is that we have to hold a vision that's better than the vision that we're holding right now. We have to imagine a world where we don't rely on these things if we're ever going to live in a world where that is true.
Sean Good, appreciate you, man. Sean Good, director of Choose 180. Really appreciate you taking the time to jump on with us. And you're right. We got to quit meeting like this. Thank you.
Take care.
Coming up next, it's time for Agree to Disagree. It's Gene Ursula.
It is 11:34. You are listening to the G and Ursula Show. This hour of our show is brought to you by Guardian Roofing and Pest Control. And because of our interview with Sean Good from the group
Choose 180.
Yesterday I called it Choose 360. It is Choose 180. If you missed that interview, you need to listen to it because he had some really interesting points. I tried to push back on a couple of them, but he makes his points very well. And if you missed it, Jeff, definitely check out our podcast. But right now it is time to Agree to Disagree, brought to you by Johnny Tsunami.
One of these days we just got to take off the gloves, just really go at it.
Guys, Facebook is looking into our futures, and they hope that our futures will include AI systems that can see and hear and remember everything that we do. Imagine this. The question, of course, being, how are they going to get access to that information? The answer being augmented reality glasses, which Facebook is already in development with Ray-Ban. Here's what they can do. So Facebook is working on tasks for AI. So it would basically analyze all the video taken from these glasses, all the audio, everything that you're doing. And they want to teach the AI systems of skills, including what's called episodic memory. So you'd be able to ask your glasses things like, where did I leave my keys? Because, of course, your keys or your glasses would see your keys, recognize where you put them, and be able to tell you. Or answer questions like this. It's called audiovisual diarization. Remembering who said what and where. So, honey, did you really tell me that we had this event coming up on Friday? Because I don't remember you saying anything at all. Now, we talked about Google Glass a long time ago. That was kind of a pipe dream thing that people weren't into. But this is interesting to me. And I just got to ask, G, would this help solve a lot of relationship arguments?
No, I don't like it. No, I don't care what it'll solve. Some arguments need to be continued to stay up for debate. By the way, this was a Black Mirror episode. Okay, that's number one. I knew why I loved that show, Black Mirror. I knew all the stuff that we were seeing was eventually going to come to pass, social credit and all that kind of stuff. But this is sometimes you're not supposed to know exactly what happened. The closest that comes to this, what I'm reminded of, is the person that's on our show. Ursula, Ursula is the worst when it comes to this. No, G, you said this 6 months ago mm-hmm. on this Tuesday at this time. Ursula is really good. Long live Mark. I don't know how you do it, man.
Which is amazing. Oh, no. We get into all those arguments like, no, you said this, but he's got a really good memory, too, so he can throw it right back at me.
I don't want to do this, Ursula.
It's amazing, though, because I can remember a lot of things, but you can tell me your name, and in about 20 seconds, I will forget it. And then I start panicking when it comes time to try to remember that. I think that the thing that's most worrisome for me is that mm-hmm. Facebook's putting this out. Because right now, I do not trust Facebook.
What are you talking about? They're here for humanity.
Yeah, and they would never think of putting profit over, you know, anything good in life. However, this could actually have some other great practical purposes. Because, for example, if you see someone committing a crime, let's just say, and you were asked, hey, can you remember what they looked like, what they were wearing, et cetera, well, you know, so often your memory plays tricks on you and you don't have the exact thing. So I would imagine that that could be helpful. Would it be
absolutely
helpful in something like that?
Absolutely.
You know what's crazy?
What's that?
Ursula doesn't even like Facebook, and still somehow, some way, she was able to muster up saying it might be a good idea.
Ladies and gentlemen,
let's be real. We have no problem. Just say it with me. We have no problem giving Facebook whatever they want. Let's just admit it. We don't have a problem giving them everything.
Well, the younger kids don't. They're on TikTok.
And by the way, do you
Snapchat.
Keep those? And do you keep those glasses, Chef, brother? Do you keep those glasses on at all times? Reunited. Keep the glasses on all the time?
That's interesting. You would bring that up, G, because another one of the tasks that these glasses would be able to help you with is hand object manipulation. So, for example, teach me how to play the drums. So, I don't know. Maybe it could be beneficial in certain circumstances.
Okay, well, I got excited about that only because I've been trying to start guitar lessons, and I promised someone, one of our listeners, that I would take lessons from him, and I still have it. Because somehow, now my guitar, my brand new guitar, is just gathering dust. So that
Okay, wait a minute. Now, okay, wait. So
I kind of like that. Again, that's another positive.
In the Black Mirror episode, how far can it go back, though, Brother Chef? Like, so for an example, let's just say, you know, hypothetically, you are not smart enough in asking your new significant other about their past, right? Which, by the way, is never a good idea. Don't do it. But some of you guys do it anyways. But anyways, you
definitely don't ask on the first date either.
I mean, don't even ask on the fourth date or the fifth date. But you do, and you ask, and then you and they answer, and then they always give you that same boring answer of way under. Anyways, and they give you the answer. Are you, Chef, are you allowed to grab those glasses? Let me see them glasses. Give
me
them glasses.
Confirm.
I need to see about them glasses.
I think perhaps they would take an ocular print so they would know who is wearing them, or at least I would hope so. Because if someone has access to like a lifetime video diary of yours, that seems like a very, very bad idea. I mean, that's like three-dimensional receipts, G. You don't want that, do you?
This is going to mess up current relationships. You know, like for an example, like, hey, honey, I'll be home. I'm going to stop off at the store. And then you stopped off at the store and then you saw somebody in the parking lot. You hadn't talked to them in a long time. So you talked to them for like 15, 20 minutes in the store. And then you get back home. And then your wife is replaying your day. And she's like, well, wait a minute. You said you were going to the store. I did go to the store. Well, you didn't tell me about the conversation for 15, 20 minutes that you had with that person in the parking lot.
Jeez,
why am
acting,
I going too deep?
I don't know. You're acting
because
very
if,
worried.
You're acting as if it's something that's going to be available like any day now. How far would we even be talking about something like this?
Wait. 15 years ago?
Well, it's already in development.
Hold on. 20 years ago, did you think that you'd be able to talk on the phone and look at me at the same time?
No. You're so right. I'm just thinking of even when I first started at Cairo, okay, I'm just going to really date myself. We still used tape recorders, those big ones. I still have the Sony tape deck. Uh-huh. We still had reel-to-reel machines. Our kids, I found one of those in my dad's storage unit. Our kids have no idea what is that? I mean, even CDs anymore, like, huh?
See, Ursula, I think that actually Facebook's target market is people who are older or worried about getting older, because so many of these skills, like who said what when, where are my keys, or even the forecasting, wait, you've already added salt to that recipe, don't put your hand there, or you need to take your car keys out of your car before you lock it, I see you reaching for the lock, or who am I talking to? I don't remember this person's name. It seems tailor-made for the forgetful and for those of us that are approaching that point.
This is the G and Ursula Show. This topic is way too boring, talking about the loss of keys. I mean, come on. You guys know what we do. You know how we do. Nobody cares about the loss of keys.
That's the reality. Also, leaving your keys on the top of your car.
It's also safer, too. Don't get nobody in trouble to talk about keys. Coming up next, your texts, your feedback, and then we'll have Ursula's words to live by. It's G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Thursday to all of you. Can't believe we're at the end of the show. Before we get to our text, I need to explain a couple things, because the reason why I got a phone call, actually, and this is what prompted me to do it. Sometimes Ursula will ask questions. I need to explain this, because my buddy asked me, like, hey, man, what's up with Ursula? She got something against? And I'm like, no. Sometimes Ursula will ask questions on purpose so that she can give other angles. That's why it's called a radio show. That's why it's people that are, she's trying to help people learn. So when we have a guest, sometimes she will ask, so maybe there's a topic that's not being covered. She will on purpose ask a question so that that guest can answer, so that we, the listeners, can have a better understanding. Understand, this is what Ursula is really good at.
You have to remember that for the longest time, before I ever became a talk show host, I was a journalist. And so I tried to bring some of that in there. And I know that there's some people, one person just said, so you're really into police and prosecutors? And does that mean that you're not into, you know, these diversion programs? No. I would love the idea of diversion programs, but I think there's room for police, and I definitely think there's room for prosecution. And so I think that was probably where you got someone asking, well, wait a minute,
yeah,
because I wanted to ask Sean Good in that conversation, you know, what about some people who don't learn from their past mistakes? What do you do?
Yeah. So I felt like
I appreciate, though, and I love that you have my back, G. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I had to explain that. Okay, let's get to the text. The rudest things to do at a hotel. 206 says, oh my gosh. Once when we were vacationing in Acapulco, we went to a local bar one night. Had so much sangria. When we got back to the room, I felt sick and ended up throwing up in the trash can. We had to board a cruise early that morning, and I forgot to clean it out before we left. I was embarrassed that the housekeeping had to clean it out.
Oh, no. Hopefully you left a good tip. This is from Joe. This happened at a certain hotel in Bellevue. If you say you cleaned the room, make sure it's clean. My family and I just recently went to stay there. My 8-year-old daughter found a box of condoms and used ones on the hide of it. Just saying, always check your room. No.
Just don't bring a black light into the hotel room. Yeah. You'll be fine. Shama Sawant wants contractors to reimburse construction workers for parking. Our buddy Rob in Puyallup says, wow, another way to increase building costs. Why make something that can be negotiated, mandated by the government?
360 says, not all construction workers are unionized. Who's going to stand up for those people?
425 says, I can't stand Shama, but my husband is a contractor and works in Seattle, and thank the Lord above, his job pays for it. He has to go in 2 hours earlier than he needs to just to get a spot, and if he doesn't, he has to walk a really long way to his job site to find a spot. Almost a different price every day. Plus, his work van has all the tools in it. He's too far, that creates a whole new set of issues. Parking in Seattle as a contractor is a job all in itself. So that person wants to give Shama her flowers.
Is Washington going to have a COVID vaccine mandate for students? 425 says, I really like Chris Rakedahl's answers on required school vaccines. Go through the normal process and add it to the list for next year. No emergency mandate. Great interview.
escalating gun violence in King County. 206 says, G and Ursula, as a former gang member with a 40-plus history in Seattle, I speak from firsthand experience when I say that much of the uptick in violence has to do with members of rival gangs from various neighborhoods converging upon common areas due to their being priced out of their respective gang turfs.
And Nick said, I like what this guy was saying, but I got a definite defund police vibe from him. We need to have these programs, but not at the expense of police.
Okay, Ursula, it's time for your words to live by.
And this is actually something that goes to myself and every one of you. An open mind allows you to explore and create and grow. Remember that progress would be impossible if we always did things the way we always have. Mm. Our words to live by are brought to you by ProClub.com, a club like no other.
Ursula is the worst when it comes to this. No, G, you said this 6 months ago on this Tuesday at this time. I ain't as sexy as I used to be. You know what I mean?
I feel like the more we talk about this, the dumber I feel.
Dang it, Ursula.
Why?
That was me.
No.
Yes.
Sure, she's the worst.
Is this what we sound Chef. Like on a daily basis?
Oh my God. This? I mean, where does Chef remember these? Some of these things are from 3 months ago.
I know.
Oh, longer than that.
I know. You know, when you play these things back, I listen to myself and I'm like, is that what I sound like on the radio? Like,
I got a little back fat. I was like, what?
Hey, just a reminder. I just want to let you know, I got from Nicole, producer Nicole, that coming up on the Dori Monson Show, they're going to talk to a ferry worker who is losing his job because of the vaccine mandate. Stay with us.
Thanks, Ursula. Thanks, Chef. Thanks, Andrew. Fresh Fridays tomorrow. Appreciate you for listening. Love you for that. And be good.